The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
The Democratic presidential candidates might be in Iowa, New Hampshire, and other cold places up north right now, but make no mistake, Georgia will be on their minds, and sooner than any of us might think. But could President Trump attract more minority voters here than the Democrats might think? And after the presidential race leaves Georgia, the state will still be dealing with some big and very difficult issues of health and life and death. Some thoughts on all of that and more are coming up in this serving of the Political Breakfast. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Our regulars are back. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist. He is a public affairs and government consultant and former national Southern regional director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Hey guys, welcome back.
Truist Park is growing on me.
We will get to that a little bit later, but we should note here, this is the weekly versions now of Political Breakfast. So glad to have weekly editions, and we thank everyone who listened every other week. We encourage you to listen every week, and don't forget, during the legislative session, Gold Dome Scramble with our colleagues Lisa Raham, Emil Moffitt, and Emma Hurt. So lots going on in this little space here. Let's start with the presidential campaigns and Georgia. It may seem like a long way off because you got those early primary and caucus states, but it's not. And some of the candidates are already noticing that Georgia may be important in that Democratic battle. Elizabeth Warren beefed up a staff here. You've got Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms out in Iowa campaigning for Joe Biden. Certainly that'll get repaid in attention to Georgia. So, Theron, I'll start with you. What should we look for in the next few weeks in terms of who is going to be a big player in Georgia, at least in terms of money and resources, if not votes?
I also want to add that Mike Bloomberg's campaign has hired someone as well. And Brian would be very happy for me to give this man a shout-out.
And we Howard should Franklin. Point out that you predicted months ago, right before Mayor Bloomberg announced, that his entry would change the campaign. And now more and more pundits around the country are saying what you said first here.
Thank you, Dennis. You know, Brian would never give me that credit.
That is not true. No, that's not true.
No, so the bottom line here is that Georgia is now on the electoral equation for a Democrat to get 270 electoral votes to hopefully become the president of the United States of America. When you start seeing presidential campaigns like Elizabeth Warren, Mike Bloomberg, also you have a Biden presence here with Mayor Bottoms. And I think you'll start to see others. You know, Bernie Sanders has already has a built-in network here. You may remember former State Senator Vincent Ford was out there in LaDon Jones, who was actually a former state representative. Mm-hmm. So they have a built-in
and network. And in my leadership, Georgia class.
Yeah, shout out to LaDon. And so what you're going to see now is where we are on the March 24th, where we are in the pathway in the calendar, you know, we could play a pivotal role after Super Tuesday. I think we're about two dates after Super Tuesday.
Well, especially if you have different winners in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina.
Right. So the good news for Georgia Democrats are three things. One, you know, we got the attention we've been desiring for so long. check. Number two, they're not only coming here to fundraise, they're actually putting an apparatus and resources in place. And then the third thing is that we finally are a purple state, even though my good friend over here says that we're purpling. He does a really good job of reminding me of that. But we are a battleground purple state. And so now we just got to make sure whoever the nominee, he or she, for the Democratic Party, that we got the resources, the infrastructure in place to go in.
Let me ask you real quickly before Brian jumps in, because since we last did a preview of this, Senator Kamala Harris has dropped out. And the question becomes, okay, there's been a lot of talk about her as a vice presidential running mate for especially a white male if he is nominated. Is she perhaps in her thinking looking at, okay, if a woman of color is picked, I want it to be me and not Stacey Abrams?
Well, let's not forget my bald hair brother in our brotherhood, Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, has also recently dropped out. And so you're absolutely right. I think Kamala Harris, Senator Kamala Harris, Senator Cory Booker, and also Stacey Abrams have got to be in the conversations if you're a white candidate running for president. The tricky part is that if I don't see a woman being the running mate of Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, I don't see that. But let's just hypothetically say it's Joe Biden or if it's Bernie Sanders. I think Senator Kamala Harris and Stacey Abrams definitely move up the list. And also, you may see one of these governors in another state that may be a male that can bring a state that is a true battleground state that the Democrats may look at as well.
Keisha Lance Bottoms taking such a high-profile role for Joe Biden, and particularly being such a strong African-American leader in one of the most important cities in the country, and having a bit of a state profile now, she would be a strong candidate for a cabinet position should Joe Biden actually become president of the United States.
And presumably, Atlanta mayors, by the way, tend to get into that conversation. You're going back to Shirley Franklin, Kasim Reed,
sure, yeah.
They've all been mentioned by the mentioners.
And let's not forget former Mayor Bill Campbell. I mean, before the controversy,
Al
Gore was actively courting him and had an outstanding relationship. He was definitely, I think, the Barack Obama before there was a Barack Obama.
You know, Keisha checks a lot of boxes. One, she brings diversity. Two, she brings governmental executive experience. Three, she has got a certain skill that you can't replicate or necessarily teach. She is approachable. She is relatable. It's a real skill in politics that very few people have. Ironically, I felt like Cory Booker and Senator Harris had that relatability too. I am surprised that they were not able to go further in this process and get more steam. And I think Kamala Harris blew herself up to some degree with an unfortunate debate performance where she went after Joe Biden in a way that was off-putting and I thought was a bit of a ridiculous argument that we should be held responsible for things we said in 1975. I mean, it's a ridiculous standard, and she looked silly doing it. Cory Booker is charming. He and Harris are both great communicators. They're substantive. They have experience. They're legit candidates.
And they both got a lot of exposure on the Judiciary Committee, in which they performed really effectively.
If you're a liberal, you think that, which granted is what the base of the Democratic Party is. That's who the voters are. So they weren't really able to capitalize on that and get momentum in any way. So I also thought, wrongly, maybe I just need to know Democrats better, that there would be a coalescing around one minority candidate, that one would come forward. You know, if people who are for Harris may get behind Booker, for example. You don't necessarily think about that with Andrew Yang, who wasn't in the last debate, being an Asian American. But still, the stage today has no people of color. That's a major issue for the Democratic Party.
Well, listen, I want to commend Brian for saying what I have been saying in the Democratic Party for a long time, and more importantly, for us to be in a position where we do not have, again, Andrew Yang is there, but we do not have an African-American candidate in the race, particularly African-American woman, when we know that the backbone of our party in every state, when you look at just how the Democratic votes breaks down, it's African-American women who consistently show up and vote Democratic. And so I will warn us, and, you know, I like making kind of, you know, warnings and predictions on this podcast. Once the two whitest states, I believe, in America are over, which is Iowa and New Hampshire, and it makes that turn to Nevada and South Carolina, you are going to see the issue of race and the ability to push these candidates to talk about how are you going to govern if you're president, and particularly, what are you doing to make sure that African Americans and Hispanics are at the table?
Will that change, though, the dynamic that we've seen so far, where in the polling in some of these later states, or even an early state like South Carolina, shows that African American voters hadn't come, at least initially, to the support of a Kamala Harris or a Cory Booker? They were lining up with Joe Biden, among others.
Yeah, and I think, and I want to say this, largely because former Vice President Joe Biden is a recipient of having a relationship as Vice President with the most popular Democrat of our time, and that is former President Barack Obama. And so I think Cory Booker and Kamala Harris did their best, but they could never, ever make African Americans feel better about them, even though they were, you know, of color.
Because that's been kind of a mystery. Why African-American candidates couldn't pull more support from African-American voters. And do you think that that same dynamic would happen here in Georgia?
Well, the one thing I would caution the Democratic Party to focus on, and you got to look at the numbers, President Trump did better than expected with African-American men nationwide. And so you better start having a message that resonates with people like me. I'm that African-American male voter who you need to make sure that you're getting. Because if President Trump gets, you know, 10, 11, 12, even upwards to 15% of the African-American male vote, then he's going to be reelected.
You know, the last time we taped here, Theron and I had a meeting that we were late to. So we grabbed an Uber and we left our cars here. On the way back, I had an African-American Atlanta-born Uber driver, and you know how they go. They get to talking, and he found out what I do for a living. And he goes on to tell me about why he loves President Trump. And I thought, God, I wish Theron could be here for this. His head would explode.
I would have opened the door and just rolled out the car. You know?
His brain would splatter on the windows of my Uber. The interesting thing in the big picture here on people of color as voters, and let's narrow in on African Americans, as they're so important in the Southeast and particularly in Georgia. They are a majority of the Democratic electorate here in this state. Is Latinos and African Americans are the most moderate part of the Democratic coalition today. Now, I don't know exactly why that is. I don't know if it's family values. I don't know if it's because they're climbing into the upper middle class and even upper class here. Some of the wealthiest African Americans in the world or people of African descent in the world live here in Atlanta. So I don't know what those equations are. But if I'm a Democrat, one thing I'm worried about, because they're so excited about the demographic change and how that's going to bring Democratic majorities, et cetera. Look at what's going to happen. That's true in today's context. Eventually, those minority moderates and semi-conservatives are going to be part of a realignment, and some of them are going to become Republicans in the long run. That's a long view on this.
And would it happen under this president, though?
It'll happen in the next 10 years. It really will, particularly as the nation reaches a tipping point where we're no longer a majority white nation.
Real quickly, just to wrap this part up, Theron, your thoughts on who at this moment is ahead in Georgia in terms of ground game, organization, fundraising, resources?
I would say that I would put the Joe Biden campaign in a close tie with the Bernie Sanders campaign. I can't stress enough that Bernie spent a lot of time down here. He's raising money online like no one else. And I do think that once he gets activated, it'll go strong. A close third, though, is Elizabeth Warren. Remember, she's come to Gwinnett County.
She's just amped up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's hired a young lady who has, you know, got some good contacts here in the state. And so I think that those three are there. But listen, with the money that Mike Bloomberg is spending in Georgia, I don't know about you guys, every single sporting event. You know, he's on the OWN network. I know Brian doesn't really watch OWN and BET that much. I do. But I mean,
I'm not sure if I have those really. I don't even know.
But I mean, you know, I mean, he's really put a lot of money here. So the TV, I think, will boost the Bloomberg campaign up as well.
Brian, real quickly, the other question about March 24th and the Georgia primary is, will the voting machines be ready? And a new report from NBC News found out that machines used by the leading manufacturers, including the old vendor and Dominion, the new vendor, actually have modems on some of their scanners and tabulators. They're not on the machines that you actually push. But when Dominion, for instance, gets the unofficial results to send to the media outlets, the modems are in there for a while, and they could be vulnerable to hacking. Which raises the question again about, A, will we be ready, and B, will people have confidence that the system is free from abuse?
I feel very confident about the system. Look, Brad Raffensperger, our Secretary of State, this is his baby. He has delivered this product. He's a very smart guy, a very successful business person. He will be judged. And this will define his entire 4 years in office.
Yeah, the very first thing he did in office will be the thing that defines him. Yeah.
And if he pulls it off, nobody's going to care. If it's a disaster, it will hurt him tremendously for his reelect in 2022. So he's got a lot on the line, and I have faith that he's going to come through and make sure this works. Now, will other people have faith? Well, it would certainly help if state Democrats quit undermining trust in the system, constantly telling people that there's some giant conspiracy to suppress their votes when there's not. There were 4 million votes last time with the old machines. The idea that anybody's vote is being suppressed is utterly inane and unsupportable.
So
I feel so passionately about voting issues. I don't know.
So I had an opportunity to actually see Secretary Raffensperger about a week ago. And the conversation that we had, because he listens to the podcast and more importantly, his staff listens. And I remember sort of somewhere I gave him some credit because he was the first Secretary of State, you know, Republican mm-hmm. or Democrat, to actually release the list of people who were on the verge of being purged from the list. With the Republican Party didn't do, and they missed a key moment here, was to actually say, hey, look, this is a step towards alleviating, as Brian likes to sort of call out, the amount of factual evidence that people produce, I believe, that shows that there are voter irregularities, there are voting problems, which equates to voter suppression. But I do think that while there is a rush to get this out and about, and we'll have a test coming up with the presidential preference primary, I just want to warn the Secretary of State's office to make sure that I'm all about speed, but security has got to be paramount. Because the one thing that's important is that you got to make sure that these voting machines in this election process is secure. And more importantly, Dennis, you got to make sure that the voters, when we leave there, when we view our sort of ticket, showing our vote, that we leave there feeling like the process was fair and it was secure.
Brian, let's turn to the Republicans very quickly for just a second. President Trump, in the last few days, has rolled out his Georgia team, sort of the heavy hitters who are kind of the honorary leaders of the campaign, and it's the entire Republican congressional delegation, lots of Georgia leaders like Speaker Ralston, basically the usual suspects. But one of them, of course, was Senator Kelly Loeffler, whom the president, at least initially, didn't even want in that seat. So is this a sign that there is some sort of detente between the president and Senator Loeffler, and what does that mean for Doug Collins?
I've talked to people close to Senator Loeffler, and that was brought up to me actually 2 weeks ago, that this was a major step forward within the White House, and people around her really do feel like that relationship is getting better. Now, obviously, Doug Collins' people are going to have a different story on that. We'll see how that actually plays out. But is it progress for Kelly Loeffler? Absolutely. Because there was a time, probably a month ago, where Trump would not have allowed that name on there. The fact that he allowed it, and he signed off on it, from what I'm told, that is progress for her. And look, on this, Kelly Loeffler has been given this window where she is having time, with nobody attacking her anymore, to congeal Republican support behind her. Mm-hmm. She's getting
and
around
she's
the state.
She's taking advantage of it. You just said it. She's running around the state talking to everybody she can.
Posting videos. She's doing digital ads, TV ads. Mm-hmm. And
She just launched one.
And the strategy here is that they're going to raise her favorable ratings up, get her support amongst Republicans higher than where it's been because she's an unknown. And that's going to make it much less appealing for Doug Collins to get in.
This is why you got to think that the governor's people, and I think the governor, when they went through a lot of pushback, I mean, there were a lot of Republicans that think that the process that
he used— The process itself came in for criticism among Republicans.
And so I think there was probably, and Brian is closer to what happened there than I am, but I think there was a point in time where I think the governor or his people said, you know what, let's go with Kelly Loeffler because we want to go up on television, you know, in January. And when you're able to self-fund and you're a multimillionaire, you know, you don't have to even worry about your political apparatus taking time and fundraising to try to get going. So I agree with Brian. I think Democrats are missing the moment here. We're about to give her at least 15 to, I predict, maybe 45 days, maybe even 60 days of just unmatched airtime where she's just going to be out here building her name recognition. She's going to be traveling her state. And keep in mind, she kept on Senator Isaacson's chief of staff, Joan Kushner Carr, who is already just like a built-in institution because I think someone told me she's worked for three U.S. senators.
U.S. senators.
Yeah. And so,
been chief of staff for three.
For chief of staff. So let me not, because I know the attorney general listens. He's a good friend of yours.
He does.
And I saw him at the Capitol and he said, don't let up on Brian. I said, don't worry. But so she's going to say, hey, you know, Michael down in Vidalia, Georgia. Hey, you know, Mr. Williams up in Rome. Hey, you know, I know you've trusted me before, but here's the new senator. And she's going to build those relationships. And so the only thing is, though, I do believe that, and I can't disclose this, that I do believe that once she goes on the record as a jurist, because she's already said that she believes that this impeachment is basically unnecessary, and she votes to not impeach the president, I think a lot of national money is going to flow in the state, and they're going to basically hold her to it, and I think they're going to try to use that time to try to drive up the Democratic base and try to appeal to some of these college-educated suburban
women
as well.
But they need a candidate or a couple of high-profile candidates to do that.
And that's where I think we are a little bit in a reactionary posture because we don't have a candidate. We don't have that millionaire right now, he or she on the Democratic side, that can match that money.
You know, and on this, I want to wrap up with this. I have said here on this podcast over and over again, there is a window of time where nobody knows who Kelly Loeffler is. Everybody knows who Doug Collins is. He's got to strike and maintain that lead. I said, if he doesn't, the window's going to close, and she's going to be in a much different situation. Here are the Republican conversations that I'm hearing more and more often. I didn't like the pick at first. That just wasn't my cup of tea. But you know what? She's growing on me. I keep hearing that, and that's the conversation that Doug Collins can't allow to take root. He's still in fighting shape. He doesn't need $20 million, as I've said, because he's
got the visibility.
He's a known quantity.
Media. Yeah.
But the early strike, whether it's from the right, you know, the Republicans, or from the left with the Democrats, isn't there. And so while Kelly was vulnerable, her vulnerability is getting less every day. And within a couple of weeks, we'll see how effective her media campaign is.
And we will take a look at some of the issues that are just going to hang around at the state capitol, that and more, when the Political Breakfast continues. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
And we are back with the Political Breakfast. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Republican strategist Brian Robinson, Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, and we are now once again weekly, so make sure to check us out every week on the Political Breakfast podcast. All right, let's take a quick look now at a couple of things that we are just going to be hearing week after week as we move through the legislative session. Brian, there was a great deal of talk in the last few weeks about two reports from state auditors on the popular tax credit for the film and TV industry. One of them said the industry doesn't have as much of a positive effect on job creation and everything else as its supporters claim. And the other audit says it's not very well supervised. A lot of people are probably getting credits that shouldn't.
Sure.
So the question here is, everybody loves the movie and TV business, but is there going to be a closer look taken at who gets the credits, how much they get, and those kinds of things? Because there's a big effect on the state treasury. Professor J.C. Bradbury at Kennesaw State found that in a study that he did.
That's right. That's also the guy who said that SunTrust, now Truist Park, was a really bad investment for Cobb County taxpayers.
He is grouchy
and the battery.
About stadiums. That's true.
Yes. And today, you've seen in Cobb County, those residents were very leery of that development and taxpayer role in it. Today, it is a wildly popular, highly successful real estate development that is paying off for Cobb County. So let's just keep in context where the source of that is coming from. Now, the Georgia Tech study that came out last week shows that even though previous reports may have overly amplified the economic impact of the film and TV industry, he found that we're actually undercounting the number of people who are employed by this industry, that more Georgians are in it than we even thought. So we're still talking about billions of dollars a year. And let me get to the physical impact on this, right? So it's not a matter of, if we do away with this tax credit, all of a sudden $600 billion shows up in the state treasury. That would depend on all of those operations, all of that filming to continue here, which I can say emphatically will not happen. When Louisiana and North Carolina did away with their tax credits, the industry packed up and moved here. And they will be more than happy to leave again, even though we've built all this infrastructure. And look, taxpayers have built the Georgia Film Academy and the technical system. We've got a new film program at UGA. We're creating homegrown talent to fill these jobs. And we are on the precipice over the next 10 years because of Netflix and Amazon, all these new content demands. That new content growth is coming to Georgia over the next decade if we just keep the policy.
But there, and the question then becomes, are other states, the potential alternatives, less, quote-unquote, starry-eyed about the film industry than they were because of the experiences in places like North Carolina, which has said this isn't worth it? And two, how easy would it be for especially big established places like Tyler Perry to pack up and move a giant operation elsewhere?
So I have the benefit of knowing people. I don't know Tyler Perry himself, but, you know, Brian knows that we had a Democratic debate there. And what I did was, Dennis, I talked to a lot of people about that exactly. Like, how do you feel, with the tax credits? And, you know, and Tyler Perry was very, very methodical in sort of coming out and slowly, but stressing his concerns about the heartbeat bill and how it may impact the business here with the movie industry. And so what we're seeing is, and I also talked to Ryan Millsap, who operates Black Hawk Studios, and I want to amplify something.
And is the coolest guy in the
world.
And
the coolest guy. And he's a friend and he's a client. Let me be fully disclosed. But what Ryan is saying, and I just, you know, I don't want to misquote him, but I'm going to paraphrase, is exactly what Brian just said. If you start, you know, pushing, if this heartbeat bill becomes legal and you then take away our tax credit, then I have no choice but to really seriously consider packing up. And what he's saying to me, Dennis, is that it's places like London, it's other places, other states that are calling secretly saying, hey guys, if you ever want to pack up there in Georgia, come on to our state. Because what these other states and these other countries are seeing is that when you make it possible for a movie industry and empires that we see to come to your city or state, the economic impact is unmatchable, right? But to Brian's also point is that what's being totally undercounted, and I think more importantly, undervalued, is the amount of people that are working with the movie industries as their second or third jobs. Because the amount of people who actually, when you go in these studios, I mean, it's people that are educated. It's not just, you know, people who didn't finish high school. I mean, these are folks who are got master's degrees, college, you know, graduates, but they also are wanting to be a part of something that's very innovative. And so I'm so happy that Brian mentioned that, because when we got to do something about the tax credit, because there is a part of it, honestly, that it probably needs to be kind of regulated, but don't totally do away with it to the point where people don't feel the benefit and incentives to be here. Because I do think that no matter what you say, it has played an integral part in boosting the Georgia economy.
Another issue that is going to be lurking, and it's far less glamorous than the film industry, but it is an industry that everybody needs, and yet we have a lot of concern about the byproducts, and that's ethylene oxide. Questions continue over what to do about it. That's the cancer-causing gas that's used in medical sterilization plants, and there are several of those around the area. We got the results of tests that were done this fall at the BD plant near Covington, and those showed levels above the acceptable risk line. Meanwhile, the state made a deal with Sterilization Services of Georgia, which operates in Fulton County. They missed a deadline to install some new controls. Brian, everybody needs sterile medical equipment. It saves lives. But cancer-causing emissions threaten lives, and the state is still struggling with what to do with it.
Tricky situation, and this is what real public policy is all about. It's not a choice between doing what's right for the people and what's bad for the people. It's a choice between two hard options, and this is one of those cases. And of course, the industry nationwide is facing these pressures. It's not just the ones in Georgia. And the industry has been going to the Trump administration trying to do an end run around some of these regulatory efforts because they don't want to have to do a state-by-state approach. They want a national standard so that
But Governor Kemp already jumped into this with some of these folks. He got burned in one case folks didn't fully disclose to him. So
And he was very angry, and understandably so.
And he and President Trump have had a pretty good relationship.
Yes.
So when these companies go to the administration, what does Governor Kemp do?
Well, if I'm Governor Kemp, here's what I do. Is I write a letter to the Trump White House and then release that to the public saying, hey, I'm standing up for you, fighting against pollution in your neighborhoods and looking for reasonable solutions. Because from the very beginning of this, he didn't come out with a pitchfork and a torch. He came out saying, hey, let's find an agreement that solves this and felt like he got wasn't dealt with in good faith by the companies. So he's been a warrior on this. He's in good standing on it. I would build on that. And it's one of those ways that we talk a lot here about how politicians can't appease the middle or appease people on the other side of the political divide. But one thing Governor Kemp has tried to do that without offending his Republican base is diversify his picks for open jobs and appointments, and two, fight on an environmental issue like this. This is a great issue for him, even though it's a tough issue. It's politically a great issue because he can be seen as being progressive and a fighter for protecting communities and children.
So you're saying go public with a letter
to
the administration.
Go public, man. Go big. Go big. And don't let my good friend, Jen Jordan, who's in the state Senate and represents
She's
area of Cobb County that's been affected.
One of the areas affected, yeah.
You know, politically, don't let her outflank you and let her be seen as the champion. And I'm saying this out of respect and admiration for her because she's really good at this kind of stuff.
And Theron, there's already legislation pending in under the Gold Dome to impose some kinds of limits.
Absolutely. And Brian is right. Listen, I agree with him. I think that's great, sound advice to Governor Kemp. And I know he wants to make sure that he's covering his bases with some of his friends who has the governor's ear. And I do that as well. So I'm not just calling him out on it. But more importantly, yes, not only State Senator Jen Jordan, also Commissioner Ott in Cobb County, who just announced mm-hmm. he's retiring, who was affected. You know, his district was affected. And I want to give a big shout out to him. He's a very efficient leader in partisan. I think we won't see the last of him. I think he'll run for something else. But exactly that. So now here's an opportunity for state legislators to do something about it. Because at the end of the day, it was almost just tragic about what we were experiencing here in Georgia from what was going on. So I definitely encourage everyone to get on board and pass this legislation.
And speaking of tragic, Georgia is one of the worst states in the nation in the rate of maternal deaths. There's been a legislative committee working on what to do. It can get partisan or political because the question of Medicaid expansion as one piece of the solution hovers over this. Theron, as the legislature tries to work on a whole bunch of issues, tries to get out quickly so everybody can run for re-election and in an election year, Does this go anywhere despite everyone saying we need to do something?
I think it will, because if you look at days leading up to the start of the legislative session, this was, I mean, it dominated the media cycle that weekend, right? I mean, and then when I was sort of stunned to know that we are just, you know, one of the worst states in the country. I think we're, you know, in the, what, the top 10 as far as maternal deaths. It really was striking to me that the majority of these women are people who deserve more state services, and they are African American, and they are young, and then a lot of them are in the rural areas. And so I would just employ Democrats and Republicans to really look at this. And look, it gets tricky when you start talking about full expansion of Medicaid, right? But I do think that this is an opportunity for the governor, lieutenant governor, speaker, and the Senate minority leader and the House minority leader to get in a room and say, all right, guys, what can we legitimately do? Because when people see those statistics, I mean, it is just alarming of what we're not doing here. So, again, I think this is a bipartisan issue that everyone can get on board with.
But, Brian, there's always the question of money, especially in a year when the governor is calling for budget cuts. Can he afford to cut or reduce here?
I don't know where the governor is on that. I haven't heard his comments, but I have had personal conversations with Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones, who has taken a personal interest in it. I've had personal conversations with Senate Majority Leader Mike Dugan, who would like for this to be a Senate Republican priority in this session. It is a great add-on to last year's pro-life legislation, because the Democratic pushback is, well, you only care about kids until the day they're born, and then you don't care anymore. And this is a great way to show we care about the holistic approach to preserving life and the sanctity of life for the baby, for the mother, for everyone. Look, this is a crisis in Georgia, and we define that by the fact that we are doing much worse than other parts of the country. We've got to do better.
Finally, a radical shift in tone, I admit. But as we leave, Theron, at the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned Truist Park. Lovely new name.
It
Does
is,
anybody care?
Well, it's a confluence of no one really cares, but a lot of people feel that the name just could have been better. But when I hear it over and over again, and I see the logo, which I think is just a little
purple thing.
Yeah, right? Just a little different. When I say it's growing on me, I mean, it's to the point where, you know, it's just something I think we all got to embrace. But the more important issue is this. Who cares what the name of the park or the stadium is going to be? We need to make some changes, make some trades, get some better pitching in here.
Fill the void left by Donaldson.
Actually, yes, exactly right. And so, you know, definitely I think that some PR firm or some firm got paid a lot of money to come up with Truist. It wasn't Robinson Republic or Paramount Consulting Group. but I do think that the public is kind of split on it. Look, and I want to be very fair to the Braves. I know Mike Plant is out there listening. They got a great people working with them. I would encourage them also to deal with the issue with the tomahawk chop, because there were a lot of fans that were not happy that they were not allowed to do the tomahawk chop in the last game when we got beat by the St. Louis Cardinals. And my wife is a St. Louis Cardinals fan, and she reminds me all the time that we got beat by them. So we got to deal with that issue as well.
Well, a couple of things here. I'm stealing this from Twitter. This is SunTrust and BB&T forming one entity. A good name would have been Sunny B. And they could have then branched out and bought the orange juice company too, and that would have been, I think, a good corporate conglomeration. And two,
sort of horizontal integration, I think.
Yes, and then somebody mentioned on Facebook this week, I saw, that the initials are now TP, which is an allusion to my childhood in the 1980s the mascot Chief Nakahoma had an actual teepee in the outfield. It would come out and do the rain dance or war dance, whatever, when there was a home run or at the beginning.
Yeah.
Probably too politically incorrect today to even talk about it if you can't have a foam tomahawk anymore. But teepee park or teepee for may catch on.
Well, the Braves have some on-the-field questions to resolve too, and we hope they do before pitchers and catchers report in a month or so. And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Democratic strategist Theron Johnson is a public affairs and government consultant and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Guys, thanks so much. And you can follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Lord Tinsdale. Theron is at Theron Johnson. And I'm at DENISOHAYER. And don't forget, come right back and join Lisa Raham and the WABE reporters for our new Political Breakfast pop-up podcast. It's the Gold Dome Scramble. It launches every Monday while the legislature's in session. You'll get all the latest on what's happening, and then on Political Breakfast itself, Theron, Brian, and I look at the why and how of it all. And if you like this show, subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to rate us. Great way, of course, to make sure other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.